Right now, it is time to warm things up. Right, how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to do that with our good friends from the Treasure Quest Appraisal Group, Tim Luke and Greg Strom, TQAG.com on the web. And we say good morning, hopefully, to them right now. Good morning, guys.
Tourists and to-
oh, I pushed the wrong button. Now we can say good morning.
Get on. There, I almost.
There we go. Are you guys there?
We're here. Can you hear us?
I can hear
I'm
you, Greg.
I'm here.
And Tim,
I'm in the car.
Tim's in the car again. Uh-oh.
There's something weird about Skype lately. I just cannot, for some reason, every time when you ring in, it disconnects me from Skype. So I have to restart my computer every time. So I don't know. There's got to be something that I'm doing incorrectly. But by the skin of my teeth, I am here this morning.
All right. Well, just check for updates. Maybe your update thing isn't automatic, and maybe it that's what the problem is. But it's good to have you there. I saw your email about the jewelry piece we were talking about.
Yeah. That's chump change.
it's amazing. It really is. It really is. But you know what? It's time to appreciate the finer things in life. Even though
that's yeah. Well, what did they do? Between Christie's and Sotheby's, they did over $100 million.
No, it's $450 million.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's a spicy meatball.
Yeah.
Well, I'm running around because I have my appraisal team, my whole Hindman appraisal team. Just about every one of them here in South Florida, and we had meetings yesterday, and today we're doing some field trips. We're going to a variety of different consignment shops, galleries, just different places to do some market research. So we're excited about that.
All right, now I've got to bring this up first of all, and this is pretty amazing. Pants recovered from a shipwreck that happened in 1857. On the SS Central America, the pants sold at auction for $114,000.
Yeah. Were they Levi's?
I'm looking at them, and it looks like somebody took a pair of blue jeans, okay, even though they're not blue jeans, and bleached them white, and then decided to add other colors onto them. Obviously this was done au naturel, so that's probably what makes it worthwhile. But I mean, it's not even out of a shipwreck that people would care. They reportedly they were an early version of Levi Strauss jeans. All right.
That will account for a lot of not only so. That accounts a lot for the collectability, because the Levi's themselves, some of the early pieces, there are a number of collectors, and we've talked about that before, but there's a lot of just shipwreck collectors, too, things from shipwrecks. So this is a great crossover collectible.
Well, you go back.
I don't know. Did you see what they look like?
Yes. They're
horrendous. I mean...
Well, that looked like something that you would wear in the 70s. To be quite honest with you. I mean, they look like pants I wore in the 70s, honest to God.
Fashions would come around, go around, they come back.
But
the funny thing is, by standards of what they're selling today for, you know, Levi's with all of the holes and all of the shredding and all of that, they look like they're in pristine condition compared to what people are paying for today for jeans. There doesn't seem to be any rips in these. They look like they're tie-dyed, but other than that, I mean, they look like they're in pretty good condition.
But you're right.
It's amazing that they lasted that long underwater.
Well, you're right, Tim. The shipwreck happened in 1857. I had no idea that Levi Strauss was around in 1857.
Oh yeah, early. It's those early ones that really drive collectors crazy, because they were jeans. People were collecting them.
All right.
And it's an American brand. I mean, just an amazing American brand.
All right. Well, but it's funny. What can survive underwater, it all depends how deep and the pressure and everything like that. And maybe it was locked in a case, or I just hope they weren't on a person when they
were. Exactly. Oh, God, I never even thought of that. No, I'm never going to be able to unsee that commercial. Thank you.
All right. Now, this is an interesting story. I don't know if you've seen it or not. Christie's and Phillips, they're closing their outposts in Southampton. They when they opened it up, they said it was an experiment as a lasting commitment, and it didn't last too long, at just about 4 months.
Right. People left the Hamptons. They're here. They're here in South Florida.
Oh, my God, yeah, yeah.
Well,
that's interesting.
Well, Phillips,
I think a lot of it has to do with just responding to the markets and where the clients are. You have to fish where the fish are. I get it. But, you know, to try and have an outpost there and say, oh, yeah, we're committed to the market, then don't they realize that everybody leaves the Hamptons and they go down here for the winter?
Well, that's
why. Well, the other thing you have to think about is if they were really committed to this, they would have tried to hold on for more than 4 months because – I mean, if you're going into a different market, you have to give it some time. So, there's no such thing as the, you know, they say as the free lunch. I mean, you have to put your dues in. You have to go through it and find out. I could see it maybe after a year or a year and a half, but to close so quickly, I don't really think they gave it a fair shake. I think, there are people that are out there year round. So it's not as though the entire island just becomes bare. There are people who are living there year round and wealthy people who live there year round. So I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I think it's kind of, they didn't give it long enough of a chance.
Well, here's what it is. Phillips set up shop in a 6,000 square foot, two-story building. Now, this would have scared me a little bit if I was going to set this up. What was there beforehand? Pottery Barn and Saks Fifth Avenue. And if Saks Fifth Avenue shuts down that quickly, that's up your street. Now, Christie's, their building was a 5,600 square foot. It was a former auto shop. All right. Those are the two.
Space. Yeah. It's a lot of space.
Well, the Christie's office, satellite office, it's spectacular. I mean, it's really beautiful. I mean, and it's contemporary. It's great for gallery space. And I still think they should have given it a little more time. I do. I think it could eventually would catch up.
Well, it's just an interesting story. And then on the other hand, for Christie's, they had a design sale record that $77 million, and I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, Lalani Auction, $77 million.
I don't know, but I don't know that anything about that one. That was...
That happened December 7th. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a good payday.
I want to do some research on that because I've not heard of them. So, and $77 million for a sale record, that is something, because the combination of the two of Christie's and Sotheby's when they did their jewel sale was $450 million, but to have one auction house just do $77 million, that is something. I'm going to find out a little bit more about it and find out what the sale was and why it was a $70 million sale. There's got to be a reason for that.
All right. Now, speaking, there's got to be a reason for that. Let's talk about. I hate to go down this road, but I will.
Oh God!
Twitter is auctioning off items, including a bird statue and espresso machines. I don't know whether it's to raise money or just to once again keep raising awareness, but. This doesn't sound like too great of an auction to me, especially Elon Musk. Whether it's right or wrong, he's not exactly the most popular guy in the world right now.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and I don't know whether it's I don't know whether you want a Twitter bird in your house right now or not. Maybe in the future you will, but any assets that the company doesn't need, they're going to get rid of it. And here's the quote. Twitter had a massive drop in revenue due to activist groups pressuring advertisers. Even though nothing has changed with content moderation, we did everything we could to appease the activists. But anyways, they're getting rid of stuff that they don't need. So,
yeah, this whole Twitter thing, I don't quite understand. It seems as though he's making decisions rationally. If that's not rationally, I should say.
Irrationally.
But I mean, I don't understand. I don't have any place that I would want to put a Twitter bird in my house. And just, you know, it's not unusual for businesses to sell off their inventory of the office items or things if they're renovating. It happens all the time. But this is kind of a very high profile sale, and I don't know how it's going to do. I mean, he's kind of he seems to be a little persona non grata at this point in time, so I don't know how much that's going to affect the sale.
Yeah, so. But that could be where he is right now. Who knows where in the future where things are going to go. That's the real issue is that's hard to predict. That's why a lot of people are speculating and saying, hey, let's sell it, let's buy it, and let's see where it goes.
Well, because he's not – the whole thing about – he's not only known for Twitter. He's also known for Tesla. He's also known for putting America back into space with what he's doing with the rockets. His amazing saving money with boosters that can flip around and land on their tail end again. He's more than just Twitter, and Twitter is one of the things he owns. And so that probably means in the future, if he keeps going successfully like he's going, everything that he does with Twitter will sooner or later come around and be worth money as well.
Right.
Well, it's sooner or later stuff is going to run off of his plate because it's pretty full right now. And I'm assuming that it will eventually level out. But in doing that, what is it really doing to his brand? That's one of the important things that has to be taken into consideration. I mean, right now he's really kind of in the doghouse. And even the great things that he's done with the space stuff and also with the Tesla, that seems to be taking a back seat to what's happening. But then again, that's human nature, is to not go for the underdog in this case. I think it's too bad because when you were talking about the rocket thing, I think that's so exciting. When we watched it, when it actually landed again, that was so cool. And the other things that he's done, and the thing with Tesla, he keeps working on that, trying to get that to really have more miles and to really kind of change the attitude of people about buying gas guzzlers.
And look what he's done taking on internet companies. I mean, I cut the cord. I have streaming services and I get it through Starlink. I have a little satellite dish that sits on my porch. and brings me everything I need and saves me about $350 a month in bills. And it's so good that we got one here at the radio station. So his brand is all over the place, and we'll see what happens in the future. We'll see what happens in the future. But
well, when you're the richest man in the world, you've got to do something with all of that money. Right. And I think it's kind of like the old adage, you know, you just throw it on the wall and whatever, see what sticks. And that kind of seems to be where he's at this point.
Well, you can't take it with you. So
That's very true.
Like what did Woody Allen say? Nobody's getting out of here alive. So. All right. Now, remember the T-Rex skull we were talking about that they expected to get anywhere between $15 and $20 million for?
Yeah.
$6.1 million.
Yeah, I saw that. I think that's actually a record for a prehistoric skeleton. It's really cool. I don't know if anyone that's listening has actually followed it or has seen what the thing looks like, but it's really quite amazing. And there again, I hope it just doesn't end up being squirreled away somewhere. This is so cool. It really deserves to be seen. And what's so odd is the fact that it's not only a skeleton, it's also a piece of art when you look at it, because it's so amazing. I would love to see something like that. I would like to see if it's going to end up being shown somewhere, be displayed, or if it's going to just end up in somebody's private collection.
Well, that goes with the remember we talked about the T-Rex skeleton where Christie's had to pull that because most of the bones were replicas.
Right, exactly.
You know, now you guys are in the business. What goes through somebody's mind thinking that they can pull that off?
Greed.
Greed. And you know what it reminds me of is, and I think we kind of touched on this at one point when our very first trip to Italy, and we were seeing during the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church was trying to raise money to build churches and to spread the word. So they started, how do you do that? Well, you have to have a draw. So what they would do is they would find a, air quotes, relic of a saint, and people would come and pay on a pilgrimage to see it. So they would raise money to build the church or to fill the coffers of the Catholic Church. And we discovered that a lot of them, not unlike this T-Rex, that was not real. It was from other things. That's what they did with the relics, because if all of the pieces of John the Baptist were put together that are considered to be relics, the man would be enormous, absolutely enormous. And it's the same thing with
multiple limbs.
Yeah, he would have multiple limbs. And actually, they said the number of pieces of, air quotes, the true cross, if they were put together, it would be taller than the Empire State Building. So this is not a new thing that this is, you know, has been discovered like this. This is not a new thing. This has happened down through the ages, dating back to the Middle Ages. So they're going to discover this in other things too if they keep going. I mean, come on, it's greed is what it is. It's pure unadulterated greed.
Well, let's go back to the high seas. We just talked about a pair of pants, right, selling for over $100,000. An ordinary pocket watch, which was worn by a postal worker on the Titanic, $116,000 at an auction. Now, that's got the provenance of being on the Titanic. So I could see where someone would pay $116,000 for that.
Yeah. You said two of the magic words. One of them was provenance. The other one was Titanic. I mean, it's what? No, it was. It's over 100 years. It's 102. Let me see, 100 and I think it's 110 years. I think since it sank, and it still is mystifying people, and it's things are popping up like this occasionally. But these are much easier to catalog and to make sure that they're real than some of the other things. So, I mean, if this is going to keep going with the Titanic, they still have all the commemorative dinners every year. Sometimes they find things through people having collected over the years, and turns out that they were either family members of people who were on the Titanic, and they'd gone through and they found things. But this is cool. The pocket watch, and it's just going to continue with the Titanic. But you, like I said, the two words, provenance, and the word Titanic. Anything from the Titanic.
Let's stick with watches, because we talked about how Phillips abandoned their auction house out in the Hamptons. Well, guess what? This year, their watch auctions. You know what they earned in their watch auctions this year?
No.
$51.5 million.
Oh my gosh!
The last sale they just had, six people from six different continents. Park Avenue, that sale bought in $21.1 million. So this past year, watches $51.5 million. Now watches are fairly collectible, are they not? I mean, they are a popular thing, right?
Most definitely. Oh yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, especially early ones. I'm trying to think what Tim we what was the one that we that. It was a very special watch. It was on the road show, as a matter of fact. I can't remember what it was, but it eventually did go to auction, and watches are big, and they don't have to necessarily be antique watches. Some of the more contemporary watches and the brands. They're on the secondary market. They're still selling very strong. The watch market, I don't think the watch market has diminished at all through all of the financial stuff that's going on. It's kind of like the jewels, unlike some of the other collectible items. Luxury items haven't really done badly.
Just let the people know, it's not just a watch. Like one of the watches was a platinum watch, okay, with a pink gold dial, and it was numbered at number 38, circa 1999. That went for $1.2 million.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's not just a watch.
No, that's true. That's true. The timepieces in general are always very, they always seem to do very well. And it's almost as though a lot of the companies are just, they just try to come up with the most expensive watch every year to see how they can do that. But, you know, even a Bulova from 1946, 47, I mean, they're still selling very, very well. And the watch market is very strong, very strong.
All right. Now, so we're going to say goodbye here. But, Tim, are you going to invite everybody over to your house for dinner, or you take them out to a nice big restaurant when you're all done?
Well, we did both. We went to a nice restaurant last night, and they are coming over for dinner this evening. So Greg is getting the house ready while we're doing our field trips. So they'll be there this evening.
Now, what are they going to have for dinner, Greg? What are they going to have?
Well, truth be told, we're having it catered because I'm still walking around on one leg. So.
I was gonna say you could have been like Donald Trump for the football and ordered from McDonald's.
Oh, good Lord! Well, wouldn't that have been funny? Yeah.
All right, guys, I want you to have a good week, and we'll speak to you next week.
Okay, have a great one.
Take care, Marshall.
Take care, bye-bye. Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This. You can find them at tqag.com on the web.